Market Music with Fairbairn and Russell. Welcome to the Market Musings podcast, where today it's been a lovely warm day, or at least in Yorkshire it has. And today on the podcast, we're going to be treated to some lovely bird song as we go down to Bedfordshire. And our guest today is out in his garden enjoying the sun. Darren Hazelwood is our guest, and he certainly has an interesting story to tell. From entrepreneur to successful private investor, and now the CEO of a listed company. So, a very warm welcome, Darren Hazelwood. Hello.
Good evening, Mark. How are you?
I'm very well, and how are you?
I'm good. Enjoying this beautiful spring sunshine.
Exactly. Yes, we have to take life's small pleasures in these days, don't we? Very strange times that we're living in.
We certainly do.
Yeah. Hi, Kenny.
Can I just clarify, there is bird song in Scotland as well, but all the birds are smoking fags at the moment, so that's just the way it is in Scotland.
Oh, okay, usually it's a budgie from you, Kenny, so it's nice to have some other birds. So Darren, yeah, we're glad to have you on, and we'll just have a bit of a chat. So do you want to maybe take us back to as far back as you want to go in your life, a bit of a history of you know, where you came from and what you did in your sort of school days, if you want, or your college days, and then early career?
Yeah, so my backstory really is that I left school at 17. I have no formal education. School wasn't a natural environment for me. Never. I think this day and age, I would have been diagnosed as dyslexic. I have been since. But this was some time ago where it wasn't such a widely known thing. Mm. Hence, some of my spelling mistakes and grammatical errors on Twitter. And that has an impact, especially on when you're younger, because you make certain assumptions around that aren't actually true. Mm. And it's only with age and maturity that you realise that people that have got a real hang-up over such issues, in my experience, generally haven't got enough going on in their life, to be honest. But yeah, so I left school, done a raft of menial jobs. Mm. I worked in a warehouse for British Gas, but even at 17, I was the only guy in the warehouse that used to take the Financial Times that always sat in the reception area. Mm. And would read it. I've always had a natural interest in business and in the dynamics of business and how business happens. Mm. But I would say at that stage, I wasn't the most confident in myself and in my own ability. And that's developed over time. I made my first investment. Actually, my very first investment, my mum, I wasn't old enough. I was 17. It was a company called Shield Diagnostics.
Okay.
It was a pharma. It ended up getting bought out.
Yeah.
But my mum bought it sort of kind of on my behalf.
Yeah.
But then a little while later, obviously celebrated my 18th birthday, which is a blur along with many of my birthdays in my youth. I bought a company of my own right, bought a stock in a company called Manx and Overseas that ended up not really working out. I believe it went into it morphed into something else, as these things tend to do. But it sort of indicates that there was always a keen interest in business. I've always been more interested in business than potentially the market side of things.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you pick those early stocks, Darren?
Generally, it was through reading the business section.
Okay.
Of either the FT or my dad used to always get the Daily Mail.
Okay.
There was no internet in those days, Darren, was there? Well, the youngsters are spoiled nowadays.
Oh, they certainly are. The research that they can do at the, within half an hour was really almost impossible. I can remember putting requests, phoning up for annual reports, phoning companies up directly to get annual reports so that I could really get a grasp on what was going on within the business and how they were happening.
Yeah.
But you've got to remember that at that stage in my life, that money, I was genuinely working menial jobs. So income was very small, even though you're living at home. So there wasn't the capital about, and my mindset at that stage in my life wasn't necessarily the most focused around the long term and what the future holds, like a lot of kids.
But
I do wonder about the internet today. Does it make it too easy? Does it prevent people from really researching and understanding the dynamics at play? Because it's so easy to get distracted with all the noise that goes on around companies and everything else. It can, I think, to a certain extent, be a distraction.
Yeah. And obviously, I mean, I like to dig deeper than your average Joe sort of, I sometimes go, one or two layers more than anyone else wants to go. So, it's an absolute blessing. So as I mean, some of the information now that you can pull out and some of the licenses, especially in Australia and Canada, as you know, Dan, you can get historical reports from like 70, 80 years ago. It's just ridiculous. It's great as well, because it gives you an absolute armful of information. So it does. I must admit. I really enjoy that side of things.
I imagine, though, that the market's probably moved a lot slower than they do now, would you say?
If you want the truth, I'm probably not best placed to comment, because before I really, really started my investing journey, it was that came later. It was the nuances of business that we, on reflection, which is what interested me.
Right. Okay.
So I wasn't looking at it in those terms.
Okay.
And I met my now wife. As I say, I was in a just menial jobs and that was fine. Living at home, my now wife, we've got a 21-year-old upstairs.
Okay.
Who's back from uni due to COVID-19. Mm. And she fell pregnant fairly early on in our relationship. It's obviously enjoying the throes of youth, shall we say. So I was in a situation where I was, you've got a pregnant girlfriend, as she was at the time, and both living at home. And I needed to sort the situation out rather rapidly. So between her getting pregnant and having Will, we found and bought a flat between us, and we furnished it on the goodwill of family and friends. And I can still remember now going around Wilkinson's and picking up the cheapest utensils you could find and everything that everyone does.
Yeah, yeah.
I had an uncle that bought us a TV and somebody else that gave us a sofa. When we built our little first sort of family home, and it worked for us. Mm. But the downside of that route, which we all make our own path, is that you've suddenly got all these responsibilities that you'd never kind of planned for. Mm. So the investing and the thoughts of business, of starting my own business and things like that, went totally out of the window.
Yeah.
it wasn't going to happen at that point. I'd have other responsibilities. So that those whole things got parked. And I know my mum made a few quid out of Shield Diagnostics or Shield. So that was good.
So she didn't give you the profits from that then? She kept them, did she?
I can't remember, but I might have to check that one out, to be honest with you. As with a lot of these diagnostics type companies, I do remember there was a bit of a joy, there was a bit of a ride along the way. But I know she came out of it all right. Thank you very much.
So your investing career went on hold temporarily then?
Yeah, it did. I had no choice.
Yeah.
This is a time in life where I was working at a local builders merchant.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all right. In fact, I quite enjoyed it. There was nothing wrong with it. But with the way things are and how they pan out, I always had an underlying belief in my ability. But something that I'm quite passionate about is we tend to try and box people off. Mm-hmm. And one of my favourite things is always when I can give you an example. One of my passions is football.
Mm.
And that when people comment on David Beckham and him being stupid, and you say, what, the same guy that's worth 300 to 500 million pounds.
Mm.
You know, what metric are you using to judge that by?
Mm.
And you can, it can affect you in your younger years with what you believe in, what your beliefs are, and when you've been boxed off. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, you look back now with hindsight and you realise that actually you probably should have strove on at the time. But I parked it.
Mm.
And there's very much a tipping point in life that when Will was a baby, there was a moment, and I've told this before, that I went down the shop to get some nappies. Mm. As you do, we've all been there. Well, not you, Mark. I believe you're recently married, so
not yet.
You've potentially got these pleasures to come.
Potentially,
he's just practicing.
Well, Kenny, that's I'm sure you two have got that one covered. I'm not. I'll leave that with you two. And I was down the shop getting that, and I literally had I had no access to cash.
Mm.
So the credit card was maxed out. Didn't work. The debit card didn't work. And it was probably about a 500-yard walk from that shop to home.
Mm.
And it was at that point that walk home that I actually realised that I've got to start applying myself if I want to.
Yeah.
And that really was a trigger point. In me and in my journey in life, I guess.
Mm.
And it's remarkable looking back. And from then on, to be honest with you, Mark, Kenny, it just got better.
So you didn't come back with nappies then? Or did you come back empty-handed?
I actually did.
Did you?
I had to cycle around to my mum's to borrow some money.
Oh, right. But how did you, without getting too deep or emotional, how did that make you feel?
Oh, it's brutal. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. But it forces you to look at why that situation's such.
Yeah.
And I did. But again, it wasn't an emotional journey. I've always been a realist.
Okay, yeah.
And the realities of me as an individual when I was younger and of that situation was just a reflection on me from my youth and from my very young adult years that revolved around playing football, going out with the lads and just enjoying life, as you should at that age, I hasten to add. But there was no planning or structure into anything. And, you know, I'd sort of fallen into a situation that I was happy about personally, but on a financial and more long-term level, yeah. I knew I could do better. And that was the point. Okay. So, and with a realistic outlook, you then start to make the required changes if you want them. Because anything in life, if you want it, you can achieve it and you can get it.
Mm.
And it's a really easy thing to say.
Yeah, yeah.
But I really wish you could instill that into kids to say to them, look, if you've got a dream, it might not work out.
Mm.
And the likelihood is, depends on how big that dream is.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to be a Messi or a Ronaldo, the chances are you're going to be very disappointed. But as long as you're prepared to work to that goal,
yeah,
and you're also prepared for the fact that that might not come true, then that's fine. Go for it. Set your stall out and try and grasp it. But not everyone fits into the same mold. And that's, I think, what I realized in that moment, that actually maybe there's a reason that there's a guy in a warehouse reading the Financial Times who's when nobody else would ever go near it. And the lads used to take the mickey out of me. Maybe there's a reason that I've got to this point, and the realities are that it's down to me, it's down to the individual,
yeah,
at every single stage, and that's reflected in my businesses. I'm a strong believer in ownership of issues and ownership of problems. The old saying, you point one finger, three point back at you, and that's the same with any business I've been involved with. And rings totally true today with Panther. I take 100% responsibility of everything on that company, and that's the good and the bad.
Yeah.
And fortunately, not that there's much bad to talk about, to be honest. But and maybe that's for later on.
Maybe. Yeah. No. That's nice, though. I didn't actually know that story. But I think a lot of people will relate to that. I can't relate on a nappy front, but I can certainly relate on different areas. To do with when I first bought my house, and for the first time in my life, had some serious debt to contend with. And I remember a particular moment where I did, you know, shit myself, basically looking at the money situation.
And, so you know, you needed some nappies as well.
Maybe
at probably
at that stage, yeah. And you know, it's not a nice thing, but it's good to remember that's what, you know, that you've been through that, and clearly you do. And I think that really does set you up well for later in life when, you know, you have worked hard to change that situation, but you haven't forgotten that's where you've come from, you know. I think that's really important. I think that really forms a good rounded individual that you know, that's good for society, really. So what change did you make then? After that moment, what did you go and do?
You then make the decisions. It's all, you then start to become more structured. And in that instance, I had to make sure that I was always able to pay my way.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that would have revolved around clearly at that stage, paying off some debt.
Yeah.
And being a bit more pragmatic, and ultimately that led to me going into business. I'd always wanted to go into business. I'd always believed that I could,
mm-hmm.
And I did, and I set up a company.
Yeah,
and I'm not going to say it was easy, because I had no backing. There's no sugar daddy in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably reflected in me today. The fact is that every decision I made and have made potentially has an impact in the private sector. The decisions you make, it can lose you your house. It can lose you your family home. It could potentially split up the family.
Mm-hmm.
So there's pressures around that that you don't see in the public market, but then those pressures in the public market are different. But you will, I will always bring part of the private business mindset into a public business, because they're the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Business is business.
It's a big decision, though, I suppose, at the time. You know, if it had that moment where you were worried about stuff, and to actually then go and take on, people would consider quite a big risk, you know. I mean, you could have stayed employed and just cracked on, I suppose, but clearly you felt confident enough in your own ability to actually take a leap and start a business, which is, commendable, really.
Yeah, that is, but by that stage, I'd made my decisions, and it's this it's the decision making process that I'd never decided to do. I was leaving a fairly free and non-committed life and lifestyle, so I didn't need to make those decisions.
Yeah. Okay. And what was the business then you started?
I started a small builders merchant.
Okay. Okay.
And
how old were you at the time?
I was 26.
Okay.
So I was 22 when Will was born, and the nappy incident would have been sometime within the 2 years around that. And it wasn't, I don't think it's early doors. And yeah, I was 26.
Okay. Started a builder's merchant. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
And can you tell us a little bit more about that and the journey of that business?
that is an interesting one, because that's when you start to get into the risk reward profiles. And it's a slow burn, but you learn. So every day is a school day, and every day is still a school day.
Yeah.
But it was a real slow burn, and it took, because I wanted to build the business up through my own endeavors, and also I had no sugar daddy, no investors, no nothing. Every penny we turned over pretty much went back into the business. I drew a small wage and built it from there. But that's something that I bring to the business model today, is that if you're looking to build a company and you want to build something of substance, that the more you take out early doors, the more that gets multiplied. So if you take a pound out today, that in 5-10 years, there's a good chance, if you know what you're doing, that could be worth 5,000 times that. And I'm not some, so don't mistake that with share price, by the way. I'm talking about just in general terms, with what you do with that pound. And so the more you take out early in the early stages of a business, the longer it's going to take you to get the foundations you need to move it on through the stages.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And that's how I started Hazelwoods. And so I had to kind of be pragmatic, but I had to be confident. I had to be a little bit ballsy.
Yeah.
But I never, ever at any stage looked like failing or even felt like failing. And build it up from there, and had a really good customer base.
Oh, good. How long was it? How long did you do it for?
I'd done it for, in total, about 15 years.
Okay.
I could cut it down into stages. The first 5 years were all about the journey, the experience, and it become comfortable. Then I doubled the size of the business sort of year 5 to 7, it increased again from years 7 to 10. And then I realized that in business terms, I was in a bubble. So I majored, and again, this goes back to understanding what's going on around you. I made a conscious decision to find an activity within the community to do, so that I was mixing in a different social circle and really understanding what's out there and what's available. And that influenced me. And eventually I closed the business down 3 years ago, two and a half, 3 years ago.
right.
But it's, okay. I closed it down on my terms. And I it was a great journey. Loved it. But the realities are within that industry, the capex is extremely high.
Mm-hmm.
So the risk reward profile of the business is too high, in my opinion. For me to be doing that for the next 30 years, I've got no want to remain at the same personal wealth. Is that all right to say? Kenny, help me out here. Is that all right to say? Is that all right to say that I'm a capitalist and I want to, and I'm looking to make money?
Your time was done. You'd done what you'd set out to do, and it was time for a new challenge. That was probably, you know, I've had a few moments in that in my life as well where I sold my soul a few weeks ago, and obviously I've had a spell as a professional gambler and all sorts. And I had a moment in that career when I just lost my bottle overnight, and that was the end of it. You know, and you just got to say, right, I've done that. Let's move on to something else now. So,
yeah, I think in my case, I'd been investing for some time. Yeah.
Okay.
And I was TR1 in a few companies. Okay. And I knew the way I liked things done. And I knew the way that I felt that things should be done. And I wasn't necessarily seeing that replicated for whatever reason. Now, I'm not saying they're right, I'm wrong. But that's what led me into this sector and into getting my hands dirty within a business, within a company in this sector. And so far, so good, to be totally honest with you. I couldn't be more pleased. And I'm not going to lie. I believe in creating your own wealth. And the way that I will create my own wealth is through capital growth in a business.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody wants to sit in any company of mine to earn a wage at a board level, they're going to be sadly mistaken. Because it's risk capital on the line for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really important that everybody grasps that. And you've got to use the expertise around you to help grow that. And I'm fortunate. I've got some remarkable people around me and they've supported me. And hopefully, you know, up until now, we've done a remarkable job.
It was quite a journey as well, because obviously you started off in the, well, it's no longer called the Next Exchange now. It's called, is it Aquius, I think? And obviously that was a learning experience as well, you know, transitioning from the Next Exchange onto the main market. I imagine it's a massive paperwork exercise to complete that.
Yeah, I think from early days, I realised that in Hazelwoods, in the builder's merchandise setup, that if your back office is right, everything else follows from there. Mm-hmm. So that would include your financials, your paperwork. And ironically, that's one of my least favoured jobs. I'm not a natural administrator. Numbers, not a problem. All day long. I love reading the balance sheet.
Mm-hmm.
But what you do, you make sure you've got the structure in place to support the journey that you've got to go on. And that's what we've managed to do at Panther. And it is a task and a half, but it doesn't feel that way if you've got the right people around you.
Mm-hmm.
And you obviously see the market reaction. Yep, I managed to get it off of Next because the market has its place, but it doesn't support exploration. And that's the realities of it. But then we've been in a tough market for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And so that slowed down the opportunity, really. But we've got it across onto the main market. We know we've come off from six. COVID-19 didn't help at all. and was a little bit unfortunate on timing. But again, I've got to take total responsibility for that. But we slipped down to 2p, and but now we've managed to claw half of that back, and as long as we keep doing the right things and we keep using everybody in the right manner and we keep getting support, I'm confident we'll make that gap up, and more, because the opportunities are great. I've been a fan of gold for many years, and that's reflected in the company. That all the property in the company is gold prospective, and that's for a reason. I do believe the financial system is, and this is pre-COVID, that there are massive issues being built up in the financial system.
Sure.
From 2008, really, there's been more awareness of it from there. But we've got debt issues, and the only way for those debt issues to be resolved is ultimately going to be through inflation. They've printed money previously that had absolutely no impact on inflation. Nobody knows what's going to happen. We're seeing the Fed balance sheets heading up towards, well, what's it at the moment? 6, but it's all talk is it's going to be heading towards 10 trillion. That's going to impact on inflation. I don't think you're going to see it in the next 12, 18 months, but when it does kick in, it's going to kick in, and it's going to kick in hard. And that's going to have far reaching impacts, because you've got a lot of kids out there and a lot of people that have got 250, 300, 400,000 pound mortgages, especially in the south of England. The village I'm in, I noted at the beginning, Mark, you gave up trying to pronounce Alzey, but I'll help you out there. A two-bedroom cottage, effectively two up, two down, is £250,000. Now, you got guys that they're used to having 1.5%, 2%, maybe 2.5% interest rates on their mortgage. And these mortgages are going to double and triple and do, Lord only knows what. And that can be the only consequence of the amount of money that's now having to be thrown into the system. So the system, what they're doing at the moment, in my opinion, is right, because COVID-19, you've got to deal with the immediate problem. But there's a fundamental underlying issues already in the system, and all this is going to do is feed them. I think they're desperately trying to stop a deflationary type environment. And that's going to be the fight over the next 18 months, 2 years. But when that swings, it's going to swing, and I think it's going to swing hard. And I don't actually see what can prevent it now. It's almost the situation we've all seen, a Titanic movie, where once it bridged a certain point, she was going to sink. That sounds dreadfully negative. Sorry, guys, but it's not. But because there are things you can do around that. And there's positives if people are willing to respond and act on it.
So what are you bullish on then, Darren? Commodities and gold? Is that the right? Is that what you're bullish on?
Listen, gold. I've never spent a lot of time in silver markets, so I won't comment on that. But the underlying, there's going to be underlying support for gold. You're going to see pressures on asset bases, and people aren't going to know where to put money. But for millennia, gold has always had an intrinsic value. And there's no other asset base in the world you can say that about. And I can see gold running for a long time, and to levels that I'm not going to say on here, because people are gonna assume I'm a rampy, just ramping gold because I've built a company in the gold sector. I've built a company in the gold sector because I believe in what gold's gonna do. And COVID-19 has actually, I believe, brought that forward, and there's certain trigger points around COVID-19 and the financial response to it that have actually only increased that belief. I think by the late 2020s, there will be a price in gold that people today will think is remarkable.
Right. Okay. Well, there we go. We'll have to talk to you again in 10 years, 9 years time or something. See where it is.
I'll be more than happy to.
I'm sure we'll have you on before, Darren. It's too long. Yeah. I'm keen, Darren, if you just for a couple of minutes, just on your private investing journey, because obviously you built Hazelwoods, the builder's merchant, that presumably brought you in, a decent bit of income. But I understand, you've had quite a lot of success in private investing. So I don't know if you can just maybe give us a couple of minutes on that, really.
So I mentioned earlier about stepping outside of the loop that I was in and broadening my own horizons. And part of that involved, I started to go to London to presentations. It's the way a lot of people go. I believe you went that sort of way, Mark, did you?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I go into London and it started from there. And then you get talking to directors and companies, and you ask all the usual questions. And at that point, I was obviously actively investing.
Yeah.
And making decisions around that. Mm-hmm. And I've had some nice. It's provided some interesting times.
Good. So you immersed yourself in the environment, as you say, and you went to the events that were on, met like-minded people, the network, and also the company directors. That's pretty much how I took it more seriously, as well. Probably what year? Probably 4 years ago, 2016. A Marriott hotel somewhere. That was my first one. I did see you. I didn't know you at the time, but I did see you there. I agree. I think that is a good, to get into private investing and understand it more and increase your success maybe.
Was the Marriott hotel Coventry?
It probably was Coventry. I think it was. It was a fair journey for me.
I had a brand new car and I got a wheel nicked from it at that event. That's why I remember it.
Oh, wow.
And my spare wheel got nicked in the car.
Wow. Okay. great. No, it's been nice to chat, Darren. Yeah, really nice. What we sometimes do on the podcast is we ask our guests who are also directors of companies, we give them 60 seconds to do a sort of director pitch, and it's your chance to pitch or pitch Panther to investors, why it's a good investment in your opinion. So I know we haven't pre-warned you for this. Are you prepared to take the challenge?
Okay. I tell you what, yeah, let's give it a go. Let's go for it, Mark.
Okay. All right then. Right. So I'll count you down from three, and I'll start my stopwatch. So in 3, 2, 1, off you go.
Okay. So Panther Metals. Why Panther Metals? The company's listed on one of the most trusted markets in the world. We're in gold, and all the underlying factors that come with that: world debt levels, world uncertainty, the midterm potential for inflation. We're in world-class and safe jurisdictions. We've got highly prospective and value-adding projects. The company is totally aligned with investors. We have a world-class network within the sector. The board's built for growth. We've got two geologists on the board, one of whom's taken a grassroots gold project all the way from into profitable gold production. All our financial controls are in place. And all the other aspects of business controls in place, we're ready to grow. You've got a CEO who wants to build a business that he knows it can positively impact on his family and the family's future. Mm-hmm. It's perfect.
Great.
Is that 60 seconds, Mark?
That was it was 65.
will you allow me extra 5 seconds just for my family's sake?
Of course, Darren. Of course. Yeah, that was very nice.
You're a gentleman.
Thank you very much.
Okay, lovely.
Okay. I was just going to, just for maybe the last 5 minutes, just touching on Panther. obviously it's you've got a nice, you know, I like safe jurisdictions. I like risky jurisdictions as well. But obviously you're based a company in Australia and Canada, which is probably, you know, sort of number one, two or three in the world. And obviously the commodity is gold as well, which is a safe haven as well. What about COVID? Has it affected the, you know, your ability to perhaps get boots on the ground going forward in the next 6-9 months? Or are we starting to see some clearance and perhaps getting in the ground soon? Because obviously in Australia, we're coming out of the wet season now in the Northern Territory. So this is prime time for getting into Australia. And I'm assuming it's the same in Ontario. This is probably the time when you would normally be on the ground.
Now, the world was a different place 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
5-6 weeks ago. We, when COVID first started spreading is probably the right word. And it was clear that it was going to have an impact, and a huge impact. That took time. And I obviously, as we all were, to be honest, following the story intently. And it became clear that this wasn't going to be a short-term thing. And we were getting guidance from Australia and guidance from Canada in terms of movement and what they would allow, when they would next be able to give us some guidance. So I based the decisions around that.
Yeah, there's definitely some light at the end of the tunnel, especially in Australia. New Zealand have definitely dealt better with the COVID situation than Europe. I mean, I think the Northern Territory, I'm sure I've seen a start, and I know there's not a lot of people in the Northern Territory. I think it's only 250,000 people in the Northern Territory, which is, when you think of the size of it, it's just it's astonishing. But I don't think there was many cases at all. So yeah, the Australians, as they do, they generally deal better with things. They've got an interesting Prime Minister, Mr. Morrison, who doesn't mince his words. So I think he's probably been instrumental in laying down the law. So hopefully it reaps benefits for Panther, and you guys can get on the ground sooner.
Yeah, well, to be fair, I don't think there's going to be any delay. It's not going to be sooner. It's in our prospectus that we would be looking to get on the ground in the summer, in our mm-hmm. summer. So mm-hmm. that would be after the wet season, which officially is end of May time.
Yeah.
It ends. But we've obviously got work to do before we get boots on the ground.
Yeah.
But I see no reason now for any delay in Australia. We'll be getting boots on the ground in line with our prospectus. And that I couldn't say 5 or 6 weeks ago, but I've never said we're not going to either. I'm really pleased with that.
All right, good stuff.
And Canada, that's slightly different. The Ontario restrictions are in place now that they've got, we've got license applications in for drilling in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ontario mining authorities haven't been able to make decisions around those. They guarantee an answer within 55 days. Our application was put in the middle of February, and those and not just ours. This is across the board. Those applications are not even going to be considered until the 15th of May. So, at some point after the 15th of May, and within what time frame, who knows? Because of COVID. We'll get the answers around those applications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
However, that is such a prospective site.
Mm-hmm.
It is a big bear. You know yourself, Kenny. You've looked at the numbers. I know you have. You've mentioned them to me.
Yeah, I've actually got a prospector's license for Ontario, which is quite bizarre. I don't think I've ever mentioned that to you, Mark.
No.
It's one of these strange things I just decided to go and do one day. It's not that difficult to do, but I do have a prospector's license in Ontario. So I have been quite nosy on some of your tenements, Darren. So that's what I like to do. I like to try and get ahead of the game, but I like to be armed with the more ammunition than your normal punter. That's my way of investing sometimes.
Yeah, well, that's the name of the game, Kenny. We've all got to find our own way through these things.
Yeah.
And like I say, my main focus has always been business first, mm-hmm. and then investing. And I was investing, but I didn't like what I saw. And mm-hmm. and I've got a proven track record in building businesses.
Yeah.
So I've entered the sector. And
You'll live and die in that sword, or live or die in that sword, so you will. You're creating your own path. So yeah.
Well, yeah, but it's all about capital allocation, and it's high risk, high reward business.
Yeah.
But around that, what you've got to do is be able to mitigate and manage risk, and that's what I've done all my life,
mm-hmm.
All my business life. It's been managing risk, and as a result, you've got to know when to drop it or when to push. I would argue around a quote for 500 quid, the same as I would sign off instantly a quote for £1 million. It makes no difference. You've got to understand where that capital's going, what you're doing with that capital, mm-hmm. and how and what the end game is,
mm-hmm.
and what the downside is. And, you know, on a risk reward profile, Big Bear Projects is remarkable, and we're going to be out there this year. And in fact, we're going to be out there very soon.
Good stuff. We'll look forward to the exploration program. And thanks for coming on anyway.
It's been a pleasure. Hopefully, I haven't bored too many people.
We'll get it out there hopefully in the next couple of days, and. It'll be good for investors to hear. This is why we do this. You know, people invest in a company, but people will also invest in a CEO or a director if they know his backstory and his back catalogue, what's his successes. Might have failures in there as well. You know, it's good to get a balance.
You can't beat experience. In anything, you can't beat experience, and it's invaluable. The only way of getting that experience is by getting in there and getting down and getting dirty.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
As I say, but also when you're doing that, manage the risk, manage what you're doing. And if you can do that, if you can manage the downside, the upside will look after itself. Mm. As long as you're doing that, you're not going to go far wrong.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Darren, for coming on and having a chat to us. It's been enlightening. So I hope you enjoyed the experience.
Oh, I did. I look forward to doing it again.
Good. Well, thank you very much, Darren. Take care.
Cheers, Kenny. Take care, Mark. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Market Musings podcast. Next time on the podcast, Kenny will reveal all his hot research of gold in Australia. It's going to be a bit of an Aussie gold hunters theme, so it should be an interesting one to tune into, knowing how much Kenny loves his research. Tune in next time.